13. This is a show about stuff that interests me. I'm Morps, and tonight, so far at least, we have the BSV, the Sard, and some guy called Suave.
Hello.
How's it going?
Hey, man.
I am currently drinking some homebrew, semi-homebrew. I guess it depends on how anal you want to get on it. I've been using Mr. Beer Kits, and this is some Irish stout, and I think it tastes better than Guinness, so...
There you go. I've had some of that stuff before. Fox has done the same thing. They actually make some pretty good beer.
It's not bad. It is kind of beginner level as far as beer brewing goes, and I'm going to use it as a stepping stone. I'm going to start, you know, doing some 1 gallon batches where you actually have to do the mash and, you know, mix your own yeast and or hops and use a yeast that's not just labeled generic brewer's yeast. But I've got some recipe books and some other stuff, so I'm going to move on from the Mr. Beer Kits, but it's certainly been a good introduction. So to
yeah,
the
there
process.
You go. I'm pretty sure that's what they're meant to be. I mean, it's like, hey, try this. We'll make it easy for you, but it'll pique your interest and
have to start
go
somewhere.
From there.
Well, yeah. You know, honestly, the process, from what I can see, as long as you're doing small batches, anyways, it's not that different. It's just your starting point is a lot simpler. With a Mr. Beer Kit, you have a can of extract that you mix with a bunch of water to get your wort. You throw your yeast in it, you ferment it, you bottle it, and put sugar in the bottle to carbonate it. I mean, that's not any different than the other systems. Your starting point is just a lot simpler than, you know, actually having to boil your grains, do the mash, add the hops, you know, all that good stuff. So. It's just a simpler starting point, but once you've got the wort, it's the same process. So I'm at least for the simpler recipes. I'm sure at the more advanced recipes, you can probably get it as advanced as you want. But not to be sidetracked.
Well, isn't it also one of those things where, like you said, they give you the base, you know, components, but you could always add things to it and experiment a little bit if you wanted. Yeah, there you go.
I've actually got caffeine. In the fermenter right now.
Put caffeine in it.
I'm sure that would taste awful, actually. But I've got a can of Oktoberfest going in the fermenter right now. And not this weekend, next weekend, I should be ready to bottle it. And I've got a bottle of chocolate extract that I'm going to put in half the bottle. So I should end up with like a chocolate ale. Essentially.
Excellent.
So I'm going to put that in half the bottles and see how it comes out. But yeah, I'm going to start playing with it a little bit. So
cool. That's what you got.
Yeah, I should be more careful about phrases I utter that people can clip out easily and hold against me.
Now, if you worry about that, it's a bit late now.
that's that's about the case, isn't it? So what's everybody else drinking?
I have pizza, but it's a bit hard to drink that.
You just need a blender.
I'm drinking some Basil Hayden's Kentucky bourbon.
Nice. Very nice.
That's good stuff.
And I'm a wink and I have nothing right now. Maybe I should go make myself a rum and coke.
You know, it's just not the same if you're not drunk.
That's true.
Although, to be fair, we had the conversation in the IRC. I'm not, like, getting sloshed every show. There have been a few, but it's like my liver's actually not in mortal danger. I had to point that out. We kind of ham it up a little bit, too, so. But, a little bit of quick station news. We added a web IRC client to the site. We kind of streamlined the menu a little bit too. So if you go under the feedback menu, you'll see the drop down for the IRC. I've also got an image link at the bottom of the page. The bottom of that front page is going to get redone. We know what we want to do with it. We've kind of been over it with everybody here, there, and everywhere. It's just getting everybody together, sitting down, and getting it done. So we're continuing to clean up the site and make changes to it, that bottom part, especially the front page. But we do have a web client for the IRC, so if you want to get in the IRC and you don't, you know, understand things like BitchX or what's everybody else using? X Chat? you know, or MIRC. You don't want to deal with that stuff. You just get on the web client. It'll work great. So,
yeah.
And yeah, we're still working on the site, but it's we're really close to being able to call the new site done. We still got some content issues to sort out, but we're really close to being able to call it done. So I'm actually really pleased about that. Let's go ahead and move on to the discussion here. Just something to kind of throw out there, see what you guys think, kind of gauge it. I honestly think we are moving backwards in the tech space. I mean, directly. Everyone and their brother is pushing cloud and remote manage and everything's through the internet. And, you know, you don't need a lot of storage space on your device. And you can just look at everything through a tablet and it's all through the network. And, I mean, everybody is pushing that. It's like all your data processing is done on a server. All your data storage is done on a server, and all you have is an input and a way to view it on your tablet. This is the mainframe dumb terminal model. We're just doing it with tablets and web servers.
Yep. Well, you know, like the way I see it, they've put a different name on it. All it is it's a server. You know, it's just a server that's not on your site.
A cloud is a server you don't manage. I think Sard or Fox said that, but I mean, I've heard it a couple of different ways, and so it's just a very succinct way to put it.
And like that's fine. It has its uses, and it's not like we should just completely ignore it entirely. But I think it's getting a little bit abused right now, and you know we're probably just seeing the swing of the pendulum. You know, somebody came out with a big marketing term, so everybody hops on the bandwagon. Then they're going to realize, oh, this isn't the best idea, and then they're going to swing back a bit.
I don't know, man. How many of these apps? I'm sorry, BSV. How many of these apps are totally designed? They don't save anything on the tablet. They don't save anything on the phone. It's all on your Dropbox. It's all on your Google Drive. It's all on whatever the hell. Good example of this is actually on my Android tablet. I've got a couple of books in the Google Play Bookstore. You can't read books if you're not online.
Oh.
Yeah, very similar, yeah. Like I said, to dummy terminals. You can't, you know, do your work on a dummy terminal if the server isn't up, mainframe isn't up.
Yeah,
and you were saying, I mean, it's regressing in that sense, but in my opinion, it's regressing worse because at least back in the old, like you said, mainframe and thin client days, that mainframe was owned by a company, and like they had it on premise, and yeah, it took up an entire room, but it was still there, and they had more control over it. My whole thing with the cloud-based computing is you don't own that anything that where your data lives. You don't know where it is really. You don't control anything of it. You don't have any rights to it at all, in my mind, once you put it up there, which is even more of a worse regression, I think.
BSV, we've cut you off a couple of times now, man. What are you trying to say?
Oh, yeah. Pretty much, they turn it off or shut down and, oh, look, you have a pretty interface. That's it. And also with the whole cloud thing. Everybody likes the cloud until it rains.
It's like, do you know what's in the cloud? I mean, it's not pretty. I mean, it's really not. But, probably even worse, like this is really apparent in the mobile space. On your desktop, you see it a little bit, but, you know, I mean, Windows 8 is definitely pushing in that direction. Mac, you can kind of see it from there. Ubuntu, yeah, they're pushing it. But, I mean, it's not, you know, you've got options on the desktop. You don't have to run your desktop that way. But your mobile devices are, like, everything is designed around that. And it kind of makes sense because you don't have a lot of storage, but... I mean, I don't know. I've got 64 gigs in my tablet.
Yeah, I was just
going to
say, dude, I disagree. There's not enough storage. Freaking, have you seen mini SD cards? Those things, like you said, 64 gigs. I don't know what the biggest one right now is, but you
expensive.
Can put a
lot of
freaking data. Yeah, that's true. But, I mean, still, you can put a lot of data on 32 gigs on a piece of... it's not even silicon. Just, I don't know what it's made out of. Metal and... whatever, the size of your fingernail.
Metal and hope. but you know, because you hope you don't lose the damn thing. But
yeah,
I mean, okay, it historically it kind of made sense for your mobile devices to do that, but the thing is, almost every mobile data plan, like if you go get one right now, they're all metered. Yeah, you might have an unlimited plan that you've been grandfathered into, or you know, you might be able to find the oddball here or there where you can get one of a decent rate, but everything through your phone has to go through the internet because the apps are all designed that way. The operating systems are designed that way. And you have to use it on a data plan that's metered. Like you get 5 gigs and that's it. So it just seems odd to me. It's like, yep, we're putting you in a system where you can't operate without an internet connection. And then we're going to put a limit on that internet connection so we can charge you more when you go over it, which you will, because the phone is designed to do everything on the internet.
Yeah, and like you said, now you have 5 gigs of storage in the cloud when you could have a mini SD card the size of your thumbnail put into that device and have 32 gigs or 64 gigs or whatever. I don't know. It's weird. It doesn't make any sense to me.
We're at the point we're at right now. It's pretty much you can choose to use that service or not. You know, like you don't have to. Nobody's forcing you at this point. So you know,
there's several apps that don't work well without like a Dropbox connection or Evernote.
Oh yeah, but like
example, I've been trying to find a great note taking. I've been trying to find good ways to take notes on a tablet because that would make great, you know, be great in a meeting. And Evernote's the clear best thing to use, but you can't use it without an internet connection and an account on their service. And I don't want to deal with all that bullcrap. I just want to take notes.
Yeah. But, you know, like that's the thing. Like that's like this full-featured, you know, syncing in the fucking cloud sort of deal. You don't need anything like that. Like just like a simple text editor is all you need.
Well, preferably it's a tablet. I've got a nice little stylus. I'd like to actually be able to write my notes. But gotcha. Yeah, never mind. Actually, what it is I'm wanting to be able to make sketches. I do when I'm designing systems, I usually do flows and outlines and shit like that. You can never read my handwriting anymore, and you're usually done on it. I'll be honest, most of those are done on the back of I've got one of those pull the page off calendars.
Yep.
The back of those is what I do most of my design work on.
As far as doing any sort of sketching on a tablet or a phone or anything, Autodesk makes an amazing.
Oh, I know. I've got the phone version. I've been meaning to pick up the tablet version, but it's not quite what I had in mind. You know what I mean?
Fair enough.
But anyways, I mean, another problem that comes to mind for me with this. Is if everything's in the cloud and it's all remotely managed and they don't have to do anything, it makes it really easy for a company to outsource like all of their IT, you know, all of it. Which means the people who actually care about the data will have absolutely zero understanding of how the damn thing works.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a trade-off because, you know, it's a lot more convenient. You know, you can deploy it really quickly.
It's not.
Well, yeah, that's exactly it. Like, but you know, like some situations, like for example, you know, when Minecraft first came out, and it just like totally blew up completely out of proportion. The guy had like two other people working for him, or something like billions of people wanting downloads. They just didn't have like the infrastructure at all to deal with that sort of servers or anything like that. So they ended up doing everything in the cloud, and it worked out really well for them. But you know, like as their company matures, you know, it'd be nice to actually see them transition back to you know, having their own servers and stuff like that. But you know, like it makes sense. There's definitely uses for that sort of service.
Oh yeah, I mean, I'm not arguing there's not uses. It's just that they're trying to push that as the end all be all. This is the method. And, you know, no, I wasn't stuck on a sales call today listening to this bullshit for an hour. I'm not bitter at all. But,
wanting to join the cloud?
Oh, for God's sake. You have no idea how badly I wanted to rip out that man's larynx and shove it down. Anyways, I'm not a violent person. Really. I swear. All the people.
You just play one on the radio.
Oh, nobody will claim I'm violent. They're afraid of getting hit. Anyways, damn. You know, Sard's already hit on this. How do you secure a system you don't control?
Can't. At least you can't guarantee that you can. You can try, but they have physical access to the box.
Yeah, the only way I know is to actually physically take over the company that has the cloud system in it, which that kind of defeats the purpose.
Our private corp cops are now taking over your data center. Have a nice day. Let's see.
In the future.
I
was going to say, like, there's so many, I don't know. I guess I'm looking from a more advanced standpoint, but really, I don't personally think it's that hard. If you really needed to have your data available in the cloud, why not make your own? There's lots of little, like, I have a little Synology NAS that I use to back up data to. That thing will run a web server. It will run an Icecast stream. It will do DNS. It'll do DHCP. It'll do all these different freaking services. And it's a little ARM processor box with like 256 megs of memory. And it just shares out, you know, it can do SIF shares, NFS shares, freaking everything. In my mind, I don't know, if you really are interested in this kind of stuff and want your data available on the internet, you can get a little device like this, and it's really not that hard to set up, and you make your own cloud. And that way you do retain the ownership of the data. You know where that data is. You can secure that data, and you don't have to go and hope and rely on someone's EULA that they aren't going to actually take your data and either one, use it against you, or two, sell it to someone else.
Yeah, you know, I hadn't even thought about the malicious cloud provider like you're talking about there. That, I mean, I didn't even get that far. I was still talking about the practical applications of it. You know, let's take that hypothetical company that's outsourced everything and is running it all in the cloud. You know, what happens if the power at your cloud provider goes out, or their network goes out, or, you know, there somebody breaks in and steals boxes? You're up shit creek.
Exactly. That kind of reminds me of all the storms that had happened, what was it, last week or week before on the East Coast, and they're like, oh my god, we're getting so much snow. That day that when they got like 2 feet of snow or whatever in one day, I'm on the other side of the country. You know what the weather was here? It was like 60 degrees and sunny. I was like, what the hell is the big deal? So their power could have gone out, their internet could have gone out. I'm over here, it's fucking sunny, nice, I'm outside hanging out, and if my data was in the cloud on the data center and somewhere on the East Coast, I wouldn't have been able to get to it, possibly.
Yeah. Well, and I'm just wanted to kind of close out with, we had a conversation actually at the last meetup. I don't remember exactly how we got there, but it's, I guess the best way to describe it, for the Galaxy 15 webpage, we are using shared hosting. It just, yeah, it's a web page. It made sense, right? And I, because it's a shared host, I mean, I'm not paying for a full box just to run the website, because it doesn't get enough traffic to warrant that, one, and I'm not doing anything crazy fancy enough that I need my own dedicated system. I mean, we can have some fun with it, but I didn't want to deal with bandwidth at the time. So yeah, no, when I set up the web page, it's on shared hosting. Which means I can never truly guarantee that the Galaxy 15 webpage is secured, because I can do my damnedest to set up the page so it's secure and so that, you know, it's hard to brute force passwords and get into the thing and you know, really cause problems. But somebody else could just go buy access to the box by getting an account on the same server, right? So suddenly they're on the same box and doing other shit on my box. And so what if somebody else who's also in the shared hosting, you know, or they're not even malicious, like they just set up a web page badly. Server gets pwned, our website goes down because somebody else is an idiot. The old TeamSpeak server we used to use, we had to stop using it because it kept getting DDoSed. And it wasn't our channel that was getting DDoSed. It was some WoW clan had pissed somebody off, and so that server just got DDoSed all to hell.
Yeah. nothing, very good reason not to go with a VPS.
Huh?
Very good reason to not go with a VPS.
Right. I mean, what we did, but I mean, that was, it's a web page. I mean, and actually at the time we set it up, we didn't know how much attention it was going to get. So it's like, yeah, this is easy. We'll just do this. So we might reevaluate that at some point, but I'm just, you know, flat out honest because other people on that server could be stupid. I cannot guarantee 100% all the time without just monitoring the thing and making sure there's no malware code on it that the website's secure. I can't. I'm pretty right. sure that it's in good shape. I check it a lot, but and I'm pretty sure nobody's getting in through anything I've added, but I can't promise it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I just, things to think about. I spent a long time in a freaking sales call today with this cloud this and cloud that. Oh, the cloud is wonderful. And it's just like, you're a dumbass, but you can't say that because there's other people on the line.
No, they're not a dumbass. Those are salesmen.
I have flat out told Symantec salespeople that their software sucked and they need to just stop calling me. That was great.
Do you know what we call salespeople at where I work at? We call them sales liars because that's exactly what they
are. That's what they do, yeah.
Well, show me one salesman that actually knows what they're selling.
They don't. That's their job is they get you interested or try to get you interested, and then they bring in their SME, their subject matter expert that actually knows what the hell is going on, and then you talk to him.
We had Symantec do that to us and tried to start telling us about all these wonderful features. So I had a Symantec server in a VM, so I pulled it up. I'm like, yeah, you show me where that feature is. Well, it's, you know, we spend half an hour digging around the console with their expert digging around the console trying to find this feature that he would tell me about. Nice. It wasn't there. He's like, well, what version is that? Well, I downloaded it from your website this morning, so I would assume it's the latest. Oh, well, I'm running the beta at home. It must be in that. It's like, yeah, you're a dumbass.
That you haven't released for the public yet that no one else can get. That's awesome.
And I no, the feature didn't exist. He was making it up out of his ass, and when I asked him to prove it, he started digging around the console like a moron trying to find it. It's like, if it's just this wonderful feature you're talking up, you probably know where it is in the console. It's one thing to say, it's like, I know the feature's there, I just don't know what it is. He's like, oh no, I use this all the time. This is wonderful. Really? Where is it in the console? Because it's not there. But I'm not there. No. I just, you know, I just, my bullshit meter is very, very, you know, it just goes off anymore. I just don't have the tolerance for it. It's just like, you're lying to me, I don't want to hear it, go away. So, let's go ahead and do some news stories. Not to change the subject or anything.
But we like to hear you rant.
You just like to hear me bitch. We're just going to rename the show. It's Morpheus's Bitch Fest. And
may contain slight news.
You know, if we run out of things to bitch about, which that'll be the day. Yeah, where was I? First story up is from Ars Technica. And this is fucking hilarious. Last week, when the world was watching crazy Russian meteorite videos on YouTube, Germans weren't. As a result of an ongoing dispute between Google, YouTube's parent company, and GEMA, the primary German performance rights organization, so that's the German version of the RIAA, a number of Russian YouTube videos have been blocked from within Germany. The reason? These videos contain background music playing from a Russian car radio. You know, all the videos of the dash cam of the meteor or dash cam?
Yeah.
The guy had his radio on. And so in Germany, they can't watch the Russian meteorite hits because the music is copyright infringement.
God damn it.
You know, the 10 seconds of, you know, unintelligible background music from the radio.
Don't forget the noise of the wind.
Well, I mean, this is getting retarded. You know what? They're like, claiming a video because the radio was playing in the... Go ahead, sorry.
That's probably actually classified under fair use. So, you know, it's probably more of like an erroneous claim. But, you know, the way YouTube works, it doesn't matter. The video is automatically removed and you get your warning. You know, three strikes and you're out. And like, there's a number of different cases. Sometimes, like, somebody will just post a video that, like, embarrasses a company. And they'll just, you know, do a DMCA takedown notice. And the video gets taken down automatically and the user gets a warning.
Well, you're pretty close. You're pretty close here. Let me go through the article to explain some of that. This is just the latest example of a ridiculous situation that has developed in Germany. According to a recent study by Open Data City, more than 60% of the top 1,000 YouTube videos are unavailable in Germany because Google assumes the music rights might be owned by GEMA. In other words, it's gotten to be such a problem for them that if it's got music in it, they just kind of assume that it's owned by GEMA and block it. Germany doesn't have an equivalent of the American Fair Use provision. There's that one, which this would almost certainly fall under in the United States. Google did not immediately respond to our request for comment. However, Google did provide a statement on February 16th, 2013, to the German Journalist Union, which first raised the issue last week. So, YouTube has no insight into what rights GEMA represents, the Google subsidiary wrote. Due to legal and financial risks that result from these processes in the context of GEMA's published royalty-free structure, music videos are blocked in Germany. So in other words, the law is so onerous in Germany, Google just flat-out blocks it. Period, full stop.
Fair enough.
That's what we're always claiming these things are going to do.
True.
And, you know, there it is. So... like, no, it doesn't. No, no, copyright doesn't have a chilling effect. No, God, no. Freaking radio playing in the background. Like, yeah, they get to claim ownership of it because of video playing. Radio was on in the background. That's sort of like Toyota claiming every car because it has tires. Come on. So, let's see here. Next one up, this is from the CBC of Canada. So, yeah, this is Canadian Broadcasting Company of Canada. Ha-ha! Yeah, I know what I said. And I meant it, damn it. Ontario's
highest... You leave my PIN number out of this.
Yeah, so, we're going to need you to put on your actual Canadian accent and say A after every other word now. So...
what are you talking about?
Okay, here we go. Ontario's highest court has because they need those in Canada. Highest court has signaled the right of police officers to look through somebody's phone dependent on whether or not there's a password. The Court of Appeal for Ontario says it's all right for police to have a cursory look through the phone upon arrest if it's not password protected, but if it is, investigators should get a search warrant. The court's ruling comes in the case of a man who appealed his robbery conviction, arguing that the police breached this charter right by looking through his phone after his arrest. Kevin Fearton was arrested in July 2009 after a jewelry stall in a flea market in Toronto was robbed, and police found pictures of a gun and cash as well as a text message about jewelry on his phone. The appeal court denied his appeal, saying the police were allowed to look through Fearson's phone in a cursory fashion to see if there is evidence relevant to the crime, but that they should have stopped to get a search warrant, So in other words, they're allowed to like look through your last couple of messages, flip through the first couple of pictures, unless it's passworded. The court says if the phone had been password protected or otherwise locked to anyone other than its owner.
Yeah,
oh, okay. It's you know, proper phrasing, and I'm reading it incorrectly.
Not the just key lock where you have to hit a certain
button. No. They're saying that anybody but the owner would be prevented from accessing it normally. It would not have been appropriate to look through the phone without a search warrant. I like that ruling. It's like if it's passworded, get a warrant. If it's not, it's plain sight. So,
to be fair though, you know, like that's like saying, oh, well, you know, his car wasn't locked. So I just had a look in his glove box and found some drugs there. Or, their front door wasn't locked, so, I just went in and I found their corn collection.
There's a difference there. And that would be that we already have well-established law about the police entering your home or vehicle and doing random searches like that. Whereas with the phone, there's not been great law. And there's not been good precedent. And I kind of like the idea, if it's passworded, if it's got a key lock on it, you need a warrant. If it's not passworded, that's plain sight, because if nothing else, it encourages people to put passwords on their stuff. But also, too, they arrested him before they took the phone.
Right.
So it's not like they just stopped him in the street, grabbed his phone, and said, oh, you were stealing shit, and arrested him. That definitely wouldn't have been a problem. And I guarantee you, if they arrest you and you're in your car, they're going to search your car. So.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So. The appeal court judge referenced a decision in a murder case in which the judge did not allow evidence from a personal electronic device because it functioned as a mini computer and has a high expectation of privacy. The contents of the device were only extracted by a police officer using specialized equipment in that case. Oh, wow. So they actually took it in and did forensics without a warrant.
Yeah.
There was no suggestion in this case that this particular cell phone functioned as a mini computer. Nor that its contents were not immediately visible to the eye, the court said in the ruling. Rather, because the phone was not password protected, the photos and text messages were readily available to other users. So, yeah, because anybody could pick it up and see them. I kind of see what you mean, though, because that would, if it's not passworded, what's to stop them from just grabbing your phone and looking through it for anything?
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, it's a start. I mean, it's a decent enough ruling. So, I mean, it's a start of setting up a framework for dealing with this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So, you gotta start somewhere. We'll get it eventually. Or won't. I don't know. It'll be Orwellian. Whatever. All right. Next story up is from Torrent Freak. For years, entertainment industry groups have lobbied search engines to penalize sites that link to a high number of copyrighted files, and last summer Google appeared to succumb to these demands. The search engine announced that it would take into consideration the number of DMCA takedown notices it receives against sites to determine the ranking of those websites in its search results. Sites with a high number of removal notices may appear lower in our results, Google's Amit Singhal explained. However, half a year has passed, and according to the RIAA, things haven't changed for the better. The music group published a report card today showing that unauthorized downloads still outrank legitimate music stores in many cases. 6 months later, we have found no evidence that Google's policy has had a demonstrable impact on demoting sites with large amounts of piracy. These sites consistently appear at the top of Google search results for popular songs or artists. I love how the RIAA is putting out report cards and statements like anybody actually cares. The RIAA monitored the search results for the names of popular artists and tracks combined with the word MP3 or download, and found that we've punched in pirate music and we're finding pirate music. What do you know? Google worked. I mean, and found that 98% of instances infringing content was linked in the top 10 results. This was the case despite the fact that Google received thousands of DMCA takedown requests for sites listed in the initial results. Yeah, they send those DMCA takedown requests. The people who write them never have to deal with them, so they don't know how much of a pain in the butt those things are. The search rankings for sites which Google has received large numbers of instances of infringement do not appear to have been demoted by Google's demotion signal in any meaningful way, at least with respect to searches for downloads or MP3s or specific tracks or artists, the RIAA concludes. They have a chart on the webpage, but I don't care about the chart. In addition to the report card points out that Google's filtering of piracy-inducing keywords from their autocomplete and instant features could be better. So you're not... Okay, I'm going to stop with this article because it's just going to piss me off. Essentially, the RIAA is bitching that Google isn't bending over backwards enough for them.
You're not censoring enough.
Yeah.
Right.
That's what they're saying. It's like, no, we want more censorship. We don't like this content. You're showing this content, and you shouldn't be showing this content. Therefore, you're bad.
It's more of You do our work for us. Why aren't you doing our work for us? Do our work for us.
Yeah, well, I mean, anybody who's ever had to deal with a large number of these DMCA complaints will tell you they're time-consuming, they're a pain in the butt, and the people who send them off don't care. They're automated. The businesses that manage those things change their names every 6 months, which makes me think they're avoiding legal issues anyways. I mean, they're a fucking joke. And then they get bitchy that people aren't treating them. Let me start over here. Most DMCA complaints are automated. They're sent out as mass mailings. If they weren't legal notices, you would consider them spam. I mean, they would hit the spam filters like mad, except for the fact that they're actually a legal notice. And they send them out without regard to accuracy, without regard to... I've gotten them for fucking printers, okay? I guarantee you that printer was not running LimeWire.
But it was printed in copywritten material.
Apparently, you can print an MP3. I mean...
Hey, you wouldn't print a car, would you?
I've gotten DMCA complaints for IP addresses that are not assigned. Like blocks we don't use. So that's they awesome. Send these things out without care or regard, and they just mass mail bomb the damn things. And then they get bitchy when people don't take them seriously.
Exactly. It's like they're just like a giant squeaky wheel. Everyone's just going to start toning either. They're going to fix it, which obviously hasn't happened yet.
Or they take the axe and remove the wheel.
Yeah, I mean, that would be best, but, you know, eventually you just start tuning it out, and you're like, whatever, whatever, and people don't listen until they bring them to court, you know?
We can't even get them to send the complaints to the correct address. We have, like, four different addresses that all have forward rules in them to get them into the address that we set up for dealing with these things, despite filling out all the forms and all the paperwork and all the websites and listing all the complaints, saying, you guys are sending this to email addresses to people who retired 6 years ago. And we've had to, you know, and it's silly. So they don't have any care or regard for the way they bomb these things out. And then they get upset that people don't pay them any attention? I'm
like,
sorry.
I'm going to get pissed off
if I finish reading the story. I really am.
Sure. Well, like I said, like BSV said, they want to blast this out there and make other people do their work for them. And if, you know, if it's a big enough, I guess, complaint or big enough amount of takedown letters, someone's got to notice and start bitching even more, but
yeah,
I don't know. Like I said, the automated thing is bullshit. And the music in the background, like how... There's just obviously no common sense that goes along with these people. They just want money. That's plain and simple. That's all they give a shit about.
I believe that. Alright, let's go to the next one. This one's from NBC News and is awesome. A new prosthetic arm has been developed by a researcher in Switzerland that not only provides a user with a working limb, but lets them feel rudimentary sensations from the hands and the fingers. So, to see Gen 1 Ghost in the Shell. It's being tested out on an anonymous patient later this year. The artificial limb was designed by Dr. Silvestro Micera? M-I-C-E-R. R.A. I'm not mispronouncing that on purpose. I'm just not sure how to say it. At the Ecole Polytechnic Federal de Lausanne in Switzerland. I'm sorry, I'm American and I've been drinking. It works by tapping directly into the median and ulnar nerves in the arm, allowing signals from the brain to reach the limb and vice versa. Later developments are described in a press release issued earlier this week, and if you go to the website, they've got it linked. This two-way communication lets the limb be controlled directly by the brain's motor signals instead of indirectly through muscles in the arm or other means. But perhaps more importantly, it allows the limb to send feedback to the brain. This is why I got excited when I saw this. This is really Ghost in the Shell. This is like we're putting an artificial arm on you, and it's two-way communication.
Okay, I need to get an axe and a plane ticket to Switzerland.
Well, I'm going to wait on Gen 2 personally, but Actually, what I'm waiting for is where you can clamp something onto your, you know, nerve bundle on the back of your neck or something, and then just, you know, dive
get
in.
Tumor arms?
Yeah, you know, or whatever, right? You know, just jack in and drive your car by your brain. I mean, Mincera has been working on tactical prosthetics for years. In 2009, a prototype of the current design was tested on another man, but the feedback was very limited, both in location and type. It could only send a certain single sensation from one or two locations, a far cry from a real hand's range of tactile experience. The new limb will have sensory zones in the wrist, palm, every fingertip, and could eventually send more than one type of feeling. So right now they'll know they're touching something. Man, I would hope they don't mess it up. It's like, yep, you'll know you're touching something. It will be searing pain.
Yeah.
For example, the fingertips could register pressure, but the wrist could send a signal indicating its position, a sense known as a proprioception. I didn't know that they had come up with a name for that.
You know, I can just imagine these things getting hacked or something. It's like, oh man, I got the bee sting virus again or something like that.
Well, that's why you don't get the wireless add-on.
That would suck.
But I want to be able to control my phone with Bluetooth with my brain. Like, yep, you know, AIDS used to just be, you know, AIDS is now a computer virus, and, oh.
And now you have pop-ups in your brain.
Oh, God. Oh, that would be horrible. Just driving along, buy Viagra! You know, crash into a tree. So... I guess it wouldn't be Viagra. It'd be whatever knockoff. But anyways, let's see. Next one up. This one is from Sans. Well, it's not much of a news story. It's more of a notice. NBC.com got hacked. And right now, or at least when I checked it earlier today, this is NBC.com, not NBCNews.com. It was redirecting to a site that contained the first stage of the RedKit exploit kit. It's basically got a bunch of bad iframes on it, and they've got links in the story here. And the RedKit exploit kit will eventually deploy the banking trojan known as Citadel. So in other words, if you go to NBC.com, your web browser gets redirected, you get a piece of malware that starts trying to steal your banking credentials.
Lovely.
So NBC got popped hard. So, yeah, you might want to avoid them for a bit. And I'm sitting there. It's great because I get that story right after I've got like two or three other NBC stories. It's like,
Well.
But, yeah. So, yeah, NBC got popped. I'm gonna kind of keep an eye out, see what they say about that. Because, like, you know, remember how Wall Street Journal was claiming they were popped and their website never tried to put malware on people? So, yeah, I do kind
of... Is it cool to be hacked now or something?
I don't know.
Like, look, we joined the ranks of the failures, too.
That's about right, isn't it? So, all right, I think... Is this the last story I've got? Yeah, this is the last one. Psychro sent me this one. It's from the Washington Post. Mandiant, the U.S. firm contracted to investigate cyber attacks against the U.S. corporations, says that it was able to track an extensive hacking campaign back to the Chinese military, in part by exploiting China's own web restrictions. China's Great Firewall blocks access to, among other things, Facebook and Twitter. People in China can get around the firewall, and very web-savvy Chinese often do, by using something called VPNs, or virtual private networks. God, the way they explain this stuff hurts. But Chinese hackers already have access to what is presumably existing sophisticated VPN, the very service they use for foreign hacking. Oh, no! Whoops! This is where the hackers may have gotten themselves into trouble. To be totally safe, a Chinese hacker would log out of the servers used for cyber espionage and allegedly sponsored by the Chinese military before logging into a separate, more low-key VPN that he or she could use to access U.S.-based social media sites such as Facebook and Twitter. Instead of following that procedure, according to Mandiant, some of the hackers got lazy. The easiest way for them to log into Facebook and Twitter is directly from their attack infrastructure, the company's report explains. Once noticed, this is an effective way to discover the real identities. When the hacker uses the attack servers to log into Twitter or Facebook, he or she unintentionally links the espionage servers with the specific Facebook and Twitter logins, because, you know, Facebook and Twitter log the IP that you log in from. In other words, with specific human beings. This is assuming that their Facebook and Twitter accounts are, you know, real. Mandiant tracked two hackers who used the handles of Dota and Ugly Gorilla. Okay, Ugly Gorilla is actually a pretty good handle. Dota, not so much.
I didn't know a video game was a hacker.
Huh?
Yeah.
Dota, Defense of the Ancients.
Yeah, Ugly Gorilla I like, though. That's a good handle. I like that. Good on you, Ugly. All across the web using data points like this. The investigation also looked at, among other things, a cell phone number that one of the hackers used to register a Google email account. Yes, he used the two-step verification for extra security. And that provided data on the hacker's location. In other news, Facebook, Twitter, and Google all give the government your information when you log into them so that they can track Chinese hackers.
Imagine that.
Yeah. National Journal's Brian Fung makes a great point. He writes, it's no small irony that the everyday shortcut users takes, which will subsequently open them up to hackers like Dota and Ugly Gorilla, are the same tracks that two hackers fell into. Well, it could be, or the hackers could be trying to pin it on somebody else to, you know, make the investigation go away. Because I don't know about you, but if I was hacking shit and thought that my IP was going to get popped, I'd like to blame it on somebody else and swap IPs. So
sure, good point.
But they're probably
still goes
right.
To show you that, goes to you know, show you that humans will still fuck everything up and they're the weakest link.
Well, I mean, hell, you look at any of the little instant messenger programs you put on your desktop. What do all of them do? Set themselves to run at startup and to automatically log in. So I could see the mistake being made fairly easily and just not paying attention or not realizing you're still in the wrong VPN. I mean, shit happens. And it's just like I was talking about on one of the shows. I've accidentally hacked VirusTotal before. I mean, shit happens. I mean... So.
I'm sure you've done this, Morps, where you're working on a problem or something like that, and you're like RDP'd into another server to RDP into a different server to VNC into a different server, and then you go and shut down one of the servers that you think you're on, but then you just kill like the first server in that chain because you didn't realize which start menu was you were on.
I've done that with SSH. I've not done that by RDPing into RDP into RDP into RDP. I almost never change RDPs.
I shut down a terminal server that had about 10 users on it by accident.
Whoops.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the virus. That was totally the virus. We got a virus attack going on right now.
Yeah, it showed my username too, so that was the worst part.
Yeah, I got the virus, obviously.
obviously.
Okay, let's see. All right, it is now... You know, I forgot to watch the IRC this whole time. Has there been anything good in the IRC before I hit Digital Dojo?
There's some whiny people in there. One specific big whiny person named Mario46.
Ah, okay. In that case, it is time for this.
Me love you long time!
Alright, I've only got one thing for Digital Dojo tonight, and I meant to get a little bit more in-depth with it, but I've been getting my butt kicked at work, so I just haven't had the time. I worked over like an hour and a half today. Yesterday was probably about the same amount. I mean, it's just been silly. But anyways, so enough about my problems. I've not tested this personally, but it looks awesome. There's a brand new Linux distribution out. It's called the Advanced Defense Harbinger Distribution. It is a Linux distro based on Ubuntu 1204 LTS, and it comes with many tools aimed at active defense pre-installed and configured. The purpose of this distribution is to aid defenders by giving them the tools to strike back at the bad guys. This is the distribution geared around hacking back.
That's pretty fucking funny.
Isn't that awesome?
Yeah. Boss at work is always asking us, like, okay, so we found this guy that set off the IDS. Attack back! Send the internet spiders after him. Attack! Go!
Send in the drones!
Yeah.
Eight, and I love it. It's named the Advanced Defense Harbinger Distribution, or ADHD.
That's pretty good, too. Yeah.
Yeah. ADHD has tools whose functions range from... I'm laughing at it too hard now. ADHD has tools whose functions range from interfering with the attacker's reconnaissance to compromising the attacker's systems. Innocent bystanders will never notice anything out of the ordinary as the active defense mechanisms are triggered by malicious activity, such as network scanning or connecting to related restricted services. So I got a quick list of some of the tools that are pre-installed on this thing. It's got Honey Badger, which is a honeypot, and it's got Nova, which is a really easy to configure honeypot. I'm probably actually going to be using this thing at work. I'll tell you flat out. It's got Spider Trap, and that's a web project you set up specifically for screwing with spiders. And it's also got Web Labyrinth. Both these do the same, roughly the same thing. I mean, they do it in different ways. What they do is it's a set of PHP scripts that continually generate links in the HTML output. So and the web server is configured to respond to these links, even though they're all actually going back to the same page. So it makes it look like you've got this crazy infrastructure, and most spiders will sit there and try to crawl it, right? So you're sitting there generating random things for them to crawl, and you can only imagine how that screws up somebody's logs.
Oh, yeah.
Huh. But
I've never heard of that one. It's kind of
neat. Oh, you've never done these? Yeah, they're great fun. You can crash somebody's logger because it'll actually overflow on a lot of the buffers for these things because you end up with URLs that are just too damn long.
Right.
It also has Beef preloaded in it, and that's for hacking people who hit a web page. You know, the browser exploitation framework there. And it's got Metasploit and Set pre-installed. So, you know, standard stuff for hitting people back. And so... the idea is you would set this thing up as a target system, as a honeypot. And you would then, you know, of course, as a honeypot, you should monitor it. So probably the best way to set it up would be to use something like the Nova honeypot in there and watch the logs. And the moment you see somebody hitting those logs, you know, just have it flip over to your IDS IPS or into your firewall and just kill that IP. It's just like add it to the block list, you know, deny all. And call it a day. That way, if you catch somebody scanning your network, you know, it's like, well, this is a server that nobody should ever legitimately hit. That's kind of the idea with these things, is you'd put it in the same IP space as all your real servers, but like never link to it. It's like there's absolutely no reason to ever find this thing unless you're just scanning the network, right?
I thought the most common use for honeypots was to put them on like a DMZ interface or something to try and lure in people into scanning it. I guess that's another use for them, just to mess with them or to see what kind of exploits or things that they're throwing at different boxes
that,
now.
No, that's certainly a use for a honeypot. Honeypots have all kinds of uses. I used one to collect SSH passwords for a long time. I've got a great list of passwords somewhere. I got to remember where the hell I stashed that from running an SSH listener.
Right.
I didn't send that to you?
Not yet, no.
Oh, I thought I sent that to you. Well, doesn't matter. Yeah, it's this crazy big-ass password list I got from just listening to a couple of months' worth of SSH brooding. So that's certainly one use for them. Yeah, sometimes you would put one up on the DMZ port and have it show up like it's a Windows 2000 server just so you can collect the malware that people try to send to it. I'm sure antivirus companies run these things all over the place trying to catch the malware so they can write definitions. You know, that's assuming you don't subscribe to the theory that the antivirus companies are the ones writing the viruses, in which case they already have the definitions. But yeah, I'm
conspiracy.
Anyways, but no, one of the best uses for honeypots is just to set up a listening post. And it's like there's no reason to connect this thing. So if something does, that means somebody's scanning. And if it's coming from the internet, that means, yeah, so somebody's scanning. So we can block the IP because they're probably not doing anything useful.
Or
if it's coming from an internal IP.
The IP.
Huh?
Yeah. I was going to say, or if someone fat-fingered an IP.
No, it's, you know, if you see one alert, if you see 20 alerts, it's like somebody sitting there hammering it.
Yeah.
Then, yeah.
Sense.
Some people do that. You know, they set up honeypots. It's like, yeah, this thing looks easier to hack, so they'll leave my real servers alone. That kind of works, but really, you're not going to catch most anyone except for possibly a bunch of script kiddies. They're going to figure out they're in a honeypot pretty quick. It's like, well, nobody ever actually logs into this box. Yeah, oh, it's a honeypot. But some of them are set up to look like real systems, the idea being to record what people do when they get into a system to try to catch behavior so you can write more secure systems. There's all kinds of reasons around a honeypot. But you don't want to just set one up and leave it, because that's not actually a honeypot. That's called a beachhead. And if you don't want to know what I mean by beachhead, once somebody gets into one machine inside your network, they can generally bounce from that machine to other machines. Most networks have, you know, they have the M&M philosophy when it comes to how to set up their network, you know, hard, crunchy exterior, hard, you know, soft, melty inside.
Yeah, it's a pivot point.
Yeah, so once you get in, you can pivot off of it. So you don't want to set up a honeypot and then just leave it. The other thing you want to do if you do set up a honeypot is you want to go into your firewall and just deny all traffic from that to your real hosts. That way, if something really does get in it, it just black holes it. You know, all traffic out of the honeypot should be black holed or possibly sent to another honeypot. I mean, you could get real fancy with it, right, and set up a honey network. But
that's kind of a cool idea, I think.
You know, it's like, so you can catch as much as possible, but it depends on your goals. If you're trying to keep a server safe, running a honeypot's probably not the best of ideas, because that's inviting people to attack your network, right?
Right. So
that's probably not the best, but they're great for catching malware. And not as much as they used to, but I mean, they're really handy. Set up a honeypot that all it really does is alert if somebody tries to connect to it on SMB. And yet there's no reason whatsoever to connect the thing on SMB. And I mean a real connection, not just like a browser, you know, not just like a Windows browser hitting it to, you know, say that it exists. Like a full-on, you know, directory request or whatever. That would mean that somebody's scanning the network and searching for file shares, which means you should probably investigate that machine.
Right.
Unless it's coming in from the internet, in that case you should be smacked for allowing SMB through your firewall. But you know, that's neither here nor there. So, anyways, though, I think I've pretty much hit everything on this. The other thing is, you know, since it has Metasploit and Beef and things like that, you could do things like set up the honeypot, and it also runs a web server that has Beef going on it. So it's like, oh, there's a server. I'll connect to it. And then you get a shell on the attacker's box, you know, and it could connect back to a Metasploit instance or a set instance or, you know, whatever. I mean, there's all kinds of ways to set this up. It's just kind of a question of how devious do you want to be and how much time do you have on your hands.
Right. So, that's pretty cool. Hack the hacker.
Well, you got to be careful doing that, though, because you can get in as much trouble as the hacker. It's like, well, what do you do when the hacker charges you with hacking them?
That's true.
I mean,
he did it,
you know,
first. Start pointing fingers.
Yeah, it's like, I'm charging you under the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act. You had no right to hack my machine. It's like, well, you clicked past the little warning on the webpage that said this will put a shell on your box. I'm serious. You put that warning on a webpage, everyone will click it. Because it's like, no, it won't. I just want to see it. You get a shell on the box. You know. It's like, maybe you should update your Java. Anyways. That's all I've got tonight. Listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Big's planning a party, actually, for a bunch of the new music he's recruited. Is he doing that tomorrow night, or is he waiting till Saturday?
I don't know.
He was talking about
it. Last thing I heard, he said he was planning on something on Tuesday, but that could have been something else.
Tuesday? Okay, well, that's...
I think he was going to start doing kind of a regular thing for whenever he gets new shows.
Oh, okay.
Well,
cool.
Not new shows, but new artists. But again,
well, we'll smack him around until he updates the webpage. So, or put something in the subreddit, something.
I provide no guarantees for the information I provide.
That's about par for the course around here, I think. Of course, pure decking every Thursday. Shoot the Noise on Wednesdays, and our seven.
I did one this last Monday.
BSV winning, yeah. Yeah, you did one, so.
It's up
in our seven, whenever. And,
just don't hit me anymore.
I'm not a violent person, remember? And of course, the Galaxy 15 radio site, which we've been working on, the Twitter handle, the feedback form, the shout box, the IRC, the subreddit. And if you really have to, you can, in fact, tattoo it on the side of a pig and mail it to Big. Mail it to Big Brother, you know, and we'll get your message. So if anybody else has anything they want to add, now's the time before I hit play on the music.
All I know, I want Galaxy 15 bacon now.
I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. The dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street. There's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no